Okay, welcome back. We are talking about matchmaking guidelines. And I want to just go to our previous slide here and talk a little bit more about five ways to meet the one. So there are only five ways to meet the one. The first one is online dating, which some people, we just went over a lot of statistics about that. Friends and family, which was the number one way to meet people before online dating. Meeting somebody at work. It's not always something that's encouraged, but there's some work environments that actually are conducive to meeting somebody at work. Meeting somebody when you're out and about, when you're at church, when you're at the grocery store, when you're in an elevator, when you're at Starbucks getting a coffee. Is another opportunity to meet someone, and working with a matchmaker. So these are our five ways to meet somebody. Now, I want to talk a little bit more about being out and about, because I do feel like when you're hearing people complain to you that there's no men or there's no women and they really can't meet anybody, that's ridiculous, right? There are people everywhere. And so during the out and about phase, most people now are like this. They're on their phone, right? They're not making eye contact. They're not interacting. They're not even open to interacting or getting opportunities to interact. So what I tell my people who are single is, first of all, don't go to the grocery store with your hair in a bun and your UGG boots with no makeup, right? Look nice when you're going to go to the grocery store. It's an opportunity for you to meet people. And not only that, most people go to the grocery store within 2 to 5 miles of their house. This is a great opportunity to meet somebody who could be in your neighborhood. Same thing with going to Starbucks, right? That's probably going to be within 2 miles, because there's so many Starbucks, probably within 2 miles of your home or office. Right? So that's a really great opportunity to be able to meet somebody potentially. And I want them looking nice, and I want them paying attention and off their phones. So just a little thing about being out and about. Now, friends and family. Let's say, for example, that you do have a network of friends and family, and nobody has really set you up, but you know that they know nice people. My cousin, for example, let her family know that she was looking for someone, and her grandmother was at a doctor's appointment. She was an elderly woman and had a lot of doctor's appointments. And on this particular day, there was an intern who came in, and he was new. She had never seen him before. She said, "You're, you know, a doctor. You're very nice, and you've been so kind to me, very good looking guy. Would you be interested in meeting my granddaughter?" And of course, at first, he thought, like, oh no, you know. She pulled out her picture, and my cousin has actually drop dead gorgeous, beautiful. And he said, "Actually, I would love to meet your granddaughter." And so she said, okay. So she asked her if, with her permission, she could give this doctor her phone number. And that's the process that I recommend that you use as well. Always say to the woman, "With your permission, may I give him your phone number?" Usually that's after the first date feedback, right? And so long story short, they went out to coffee. They totally hit it off, and they wound up in a relationship. So your friends and family network is really important, and birds of a feather flock together. You might really like some of the friends or the kids of the friends of your relatives or your friends because you have a lot in common, right? And probably share a lot of the same values. So one thing that you can do is just tell your friends and family, "Hey, I'm really serious about finding someone. If anybody comes to mind, would you be willing to introduce me?" The other thing that you can do is you can have a party at your house, and you can invite your friends and say the price of admission is bringing an opposite sex single person that you're not interested in. Everybody has a brother, a friend, a coworker who is great that they would love to see matched up who they're not interested in, right? So that's another thing that you can do as well, too. There was a doctor in Beverly Hills. His name was Dr. Dan, and Dr. Dan was single and wanted to meet someone, and he implemented just this strategy. And soon it got the gathering got so big. He started doing this once a month. It soon got so big he had to take it out of his house and have it hosted at a restaurant. And after a while, it just continued to grow and grow and get bigger. He had an actual email list he had to have to manage this because so many people signed up for Dr. Dan's singles party. And he eventually did meet a woman that he fell in love with and got married to, and the two of them carried on the tradition by having the monthly party to help other people meet someone. So, if you have a client who is a great networker, recommend this option. If they're not a great networker, they might have a friend who is a great networker who would love to take this assignment and run with it. So, there are plenty of ways that people can try and implement to meet someone. Okay, so matchmaking guidelines. Do not pressure singles to marry or to even date. We talked about that before, really affirming singleness and that singleness can be a calling too. Classes on singleness. You know, there are a lot of benefits to singleness, and there's a lot that we can work on in our journey with God and becoming closer to Him and becoming a whole unique person. So this is something that we could also be offering, right? We talked about the fact of wanting to become single even while we're still married. So maybe some of those people who are in a marriage who've kind of lost themselves and don't remember who they are anymore, that need to rediscover that, can attend a class on singleness, maybe that you would be willing to teach at your church or in your community. Also remembering that God doesn't choose a mate and neither do you. So keeping that in mind as well. And then setting realistic expectations and encouraging friendships. So when you're sending people out on a date, you really want to set realistic expectations. You don't want to say to them, "Oh my God, I'm going to send you out with this guy and he's so great. I know he's going to be your husband." Or, "He's a perfect guy that you're, you know, he's exactly what you have been looking for. You guys are totally going to hit it off. Invite me to the wedding," right? We just set realistic expectations. So, you know what? Bob is a great match for you. Here's the reason why I picked him. He really loves God. He's a mature and committed Christian. Those are the top two qualities that you're looking for. He is age appropriate for you. He's in a good age range. Just like you, his kids are out of the house and he's really interested in spending some time now traveling and doing some fun activities. Right? So here's Bob. Here's why I picked him for you. Here's why I think that he's a great match. I really want you guys to get together. You're going to have a great time. He knows a ton about you, too. I think you'll have a lot of things to talk about. And follow up with me. Give me feedback within 24 to 48 hours and let me know how it goes. That's really how you want to set your matches up. That's completely different. Right? It's very professional. It takes you out of the loop. It takes you out of the responsibility if things don't work out, that they're mad at you, right? Because you introduced them to this person and things didn't work out. And so you want to set those real expectations and also the parameters that we talked about before. Put a time limit on the date for them to get together. And then encourage friendships. "Hey, listen, I don't know if Bob's going to be the perfect guy for you. You guys certainly have a lot in common. You're going to have a great time talking and getting to know each other. I really enjoy talking to him and think he's a great person, so I know that you will too. But I also want you to keep in mind that birds of a feather flock together, right? So if Bob doesn't feel like he is going to be a great match for you, if you're just not feeling the connection with him there, you guys do have a lot in common. I want to encourage you to consider having a friendship with him, because I've seen this happen before and it's really cool when it does, where you go out on a match with someone and you say, "Hey, you know, we're just not right for each other, but my friend Amy would be amazing for you. With your permission, could I introduce you?" And Amy and Bob meet and they totally hit it off and they ride into the sunset, right? So you really want to encourage those types of things. You don't want people burning bridges on some of these dates. And you don't want them to show up and decide in 5 or 10 minutes that they're not interested and as a result of that, feel not invested in the date and be grumpy and rude or leave early, right? All of those things happen. And it's kind of embarrassing to the matchmaker when it does. So, okay. We talked about making the match and presenting the match. And the feedback process, we already talked about too. Coaching after the match, we talked about. And that's it. That concludes our presentation on coaching and matchmaking. And at this point, I would love to answer any questions that you might have.
What do you mean by, you know, I understand what you mean by guesswork. God doesn't choose to make, but exactly what do you mean by neither do you?
Oh, well, we talked about this in our earlier session, and one of the things that we talked about was that God doesn't choose people's mates for them, that it's an act of free will that we choose on our own. And so one of the things that we want to be very careful about when we're matchmaking people is not to prophesy over them or tell them that we have met their match, right?
I misunderstood the statement that I was I read it as like, you don't pick your own match. I was like, that's confusing.
Yeah. Okay. And neither do you as in you, the matchmaker.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Looking
good clarification. No, good clarification. Thank you. Any other questions?
Okay, so I'm curious. So you said, you should set up the date for them. And then when you were talking about it, you were kind of like, oh, I think that you guys should meet and plan for me. So, do you, depending on the person, sometimes you let them set it up themselves, and sometimes you set it up with a reservation at a restaurant? Does that make sense?
Did I say something confusing? I actually always set up the date. I always do. Now, I know that sometimes when you're doing this as a volunteer and you don't have a lot of time, or also if you're just kind of operating in your friend network or in your church network, maybe you're going to do something for example, to the gentleman, hey, we're having a picnic at the church next week. I know that she's going to be there. I'd love to introduce you if you're there too. Right? That's something that you can do on a more casual volunteer basis if you're not doing matchmaking professionally, right? Is do that kind of thing. Yeah. Yeah.
If doing it professionally, do you primarily go for dinner dates, or do you kind of base it off the interests of both people?
For the first date, I don't call it a date. I call it gathering data. And I think that requires a face-to-face meeting where you can sit down and just have a face-to-face conversation. So I always do that at a restaurant. I don't do activity dates. Sometimes it's a little hard for my introverted guys because they don't like to sit and talk, right? But at the same time, I think it's kind of a necessary component to be able to get to know somebody. So I always send them to a restaurant. I always send them to a restaurant only where I can make a reservation. I'll never send them to a Starbucks, a coffee shop, somewhere that's loud. I want them to go somewhere nice with a white tablecloth that they can sit down and have a waiter or waitress come and talk to them. But I don't schedule dinner dates for that initial meeting. I will do lunch. I will do drinks and appetizers, or I will do coffee and dessert. I really respect my gentleman. I do set the requirement that the gentleman pick up the tab. I just think that that's how it should be in a dating situation, right? So I'd set that requirement, but at the same time, I understand that dating and getting to know women can be a process that requires meeting a quantity of people and a large investment on the part of the man, and I really respect him. And so I want him to just meet for, like I said, coffee, drinks and appetizers, lunch for the first initial meeting. After that, if he wants to do an 8-course dinner somewhere, that's great. But I don't want to stick him with that on the first date. And, you know, you'll hear from people with online dating, and especially from women, well, I met him online and he wouldn't take me to whatever, Mr. Chow's or whatever steak place. And I just, so I didn't go out with him. And I just think, wow, really? He doesn't even know you. He's never even met you in person, right? It's kind of some of that entitlement stuff that we talked about before, the giver and the receiver without the last part of that equation, right? So anyway, yeah, just I like to keep it nice and upscale, but also not too much pressure.
So if you train somebody, say you train her proposed organization, she becomes matchmaker, minister, or in our organization, stuff, I'm involved with somebody kind of you and you rocked it out and they become awesome.
Yeah.
What's your financial connection to them later on? Because if they're, obviously you did the training initially, but they're coaching, they're doing that stuff, they're charging for their services.
Okay.
I mean, not in a mean way, you got to be able to produce the network.
Yeah, no, I see. So there is an association. It is the International Association of Matchmaking Ministers. Anyone who's gone through the training here at CLI can join that and not only be a member but have access to our software technology, our private network of matchmakers, our private database of singles, and what else can they do through that, and get continuing education. So all of the people that I train, I'm offering continuing education and mentoring through the association. Yeah. But it's just like, you know, people who go out and train, you know, yoga teachers or something like that. You know, they come in and they do their training and then they go off and do their thing. So
that's what it was. So in contact with the network, so you still have something that you're actively offering.
Yeah, definitely. And I'm really interested. I'm not interested in creating students. I'm interested in creating teachers. I want other people to go out and learn about this and teach other people as well. So, yeah.
Have you noticed, I think I might have misunderstood you. You said you check in with them on the six-month mark to see if the guy at first is still interested in pursuing a marriage with the other person. Have you noticed it being an issue where they'll say, yeah, they want to pursue a marriage, but they're not ready to make a move yet?
Yeah.
And how do you, like, go about, do you encourage them to speed up the time frame, and how do you do that then?
Yeah, just by really informing them of that it's, in my opinion, disrespectful to her to continue to string her along if they're not willing to make a decision, and we'll have a conversation about it, right? So the first thing I want to know is, why aren't you willing to make a decision? Is it about her or is it about you, right? And whatever it is about, well, then let's talk about that, and let's drill down on that. Well, what's your time frame for resolving that? Okay, well, let's set some goals around that and make sure that that gets done. Let's imagine that that was done. Would you be willing to move forward with the situation? So sometimes people just really need to also talk about things out loud, right? And it's your job to be available there to kind of ask them questions, because nobody's questioning them. Here's the thing. We used to have a system where there were arranged marriages. Then we also had a system where parents were very involved in their kids' marriages. We used to have boys who, if they wanted to call on the telephone to the house, they would have to ask dad, who answered the phone, for permission to talk to his daughter. Right? And dad would say, who's this? And he would decide whether you got to talk to her or not, ever, or just what time you could talk to her, right? So now with technology and kids having cell phones and young adults having cell phones, we have bypassed that whole system completely. And I don't believe that most men, probably outside the Christian community in America, really feel that they have any obligation to ask a woman's father if for his permission to marry her, right? So we have a whole different system that's happening now, and the church and many parents take a very hands-off, back-off approach. Well, it's their business. I think their kids' business is their business when they get married. then you do need to take a hands-off approach, because it's not the joining of two families, it's the creation of the third family, mm-hmm. right? So you really need to not invade their space and turn from an in-law to an outlaw, right? But until that time, that daughter still got the name. We talked about naming and claiming and responsibility. She's still got her father's name. In my opinion, her father is still responsible for her. Responsible to participate in the decision of who it is that is going to be responsible for her after him. So we've had a lot of people, that whole system has really fallen apart. And even the church members don't want to be busybodies. They don't want to be nosy. They don't want to, you know, get in people's business, right? So it is a blessing to people who are actively searching out help to have somebody like a matchmaker and a coach that they can talk to, who's going to ask them these questions, who's going to ask them the hard questions, who's going to maybe even push them a little bit. And I'm not saying push them towards getting married, but push them towards being a decisive person who's planning their future and being considerate of another person who also is being wrapped up in that, right? So we really, really need to be... I think follow up with people and not take such a hands-off approach. People want it. Part of this confusion is that people are going like, I just want some structure. I want a plan. I want a map. I want a blueprint. I want a script. I want to know, what do I do? And they try one thing after another that doesn't work, I think, until they come to this. Because this does work. So, anyway...
I got a question.
Yeah.
So, in your experience, have you found that this changes the dating dynamic a little bit? Like, do people express that? Like, when they're used to going out and meeting somebody online, does it change the way they communicate with people?
Yes. Men love it. Men absolutely love it, because men are getting beat up on their dates by going out with, well, you know, you hold the door open and, you know, she's mad. You go to open the car door and she's like, I don't have time for that. I can open it myself, right? And so this whole process of, there are a lot of men out there who really want to be a gentleman but have been berated for doing so. Right? So they love it. Finally, they're in a system where they can, like, they know what the rules are and they're not going to get in trouble. So, a lot of times I tell women, one of the things that you have to do is just tell men how to win with you. That's what all they want to know is, how can they make you happy? So if you tell them how to win with you and you set them up for success, that's huge. So I think that I set men up for success. I think the system sets men up for success because they know what the rules are, and so do the women. Right? So it is refreshing. It is a load off of people. And the guys even like it too, because, you know, I have men even share with me, again, I have, you know, the women are the ones who are trying to have sex in the older years and not wait. Right? And some of my guys, you know, some of them will go for it, but some of my other guys are so proud of themselves. They love calling me and checking in with me and going like, well, she tried, but I didn't do anything. Right? They love it. And so, you know, and then I tell them how proud I am of them and how awesome it is that they're just growing as a person and learning how to make better decisions, and how much different this is than the previous relationships they're scared about repeating, right? And so sometimes just like that approval and encouragement, yeah. Right? And have somebody just being on the journey with you to witness what's happening in your life. Yeah.
That's really good. I like it a lot. To have the voice, like, with the biblical backing about the decisions they're making. And
yeah.
Constant positive reinforcement as opposed to their own journey on the TV and then seeing what everybody else is doing.
That's right.
That's really good.
That's right. And I love that you say God's voice, because what's really fun is sometimes they'll call me about a certain situation and a story from the Bible comes to mind.
Yeah.
And I say, exactly the situation was experienced in the Bible. Can I tell you the story?
Awesome.
And so then I get to do that, right?
So awesome.
Which is really fun. Yeah.
That's great.
So it just happened the other day, but it's escaping me what story it was, but anyway, there are lots of times where you can pull out quotes and scripture and stories, and people love stories the most. They love stories about other matchmaking, success stories. They like stories from the Bible. People love stories about people. Yeah. Do you want to hear a success story from matchmaking? Okay. So when I first started matchmaking, I worked at the dating service, right? And this guy comes in, and he's 34 years old. He's like 6'2", very fit, very good-looking, former professional athlete, owns his own company, has a master's degree from an Ivy League school, and comes from a very wealthy family. And so I'm like, oh, wow, this is like my John F. Kennedy Jr. client, right? And very good-looking. So I'm like, okay, I'm going to match this guy, and like, this is going to be the easiest thing I've ever done in life. Two or three matches, this guy is going to be in a relationship, and this, like, what a lucky girl. So 18 months later, I still have Tim, and I'm sitting there going, like, there's got to be something wrong with me. Clearly, I'm not very good at this. If I can't match that guy, there's something wrong with me. So he makes an appointment, he comes into the office, and he says, look, Christina, you've done a great job. You've done everything that I asked you to do. All the women that I've met meet my criteria. I just haven't had the lightning bolts or the fireworks or rainbows and unicorns. I just haven't had it yet. And so, but it's not you. She said, okay, and I encouraged him to keep trying at that point. Well, with about a week of that meeting, Jennifer comes into the office, and she was 28 years old, very pretty. She was a nurse and just really smart, pretty girl. And she had just broken up with her boyfriend literally like a week before. And she cried through an entire box of tissues during her interview. And it turns out that they had been together for 4 years. And when they first met, he said, I'm never getting married and I'm never having kids. And she thought, well, what do I care? I'm 24 years old. And I'm not worried about that right now either. But she also said something that I call Cinderella logic. And Cinderella logic is the thought that she had, which is, I've never felt like this before. Therefore, it must be true love. And therefore, everything's going to work itself out. So, 4 years later, they wake up one morning in his apartment, and they're all snuggled up under the covers, and she turns to him and she says, honey, when are we going to get married and have babies? He literally jumps out of the bed, naked, wraps a sheet around himself, and he says, never. What are you talking about? I told you when we got together, I'm never getting married and I'm never having kids. And she said, okay, but we love each other. And he said, well, yeah, but this is all it's ever going to be. I've got my house. You've got your place. I've got my job and my life. You've got your job and your life. This is all it's ever going to be, but I do love you. But this is all I want. And so at that moment, she got up. She got out of bed. She got dressed. She gathered up the things that she had at his apartment. She left and she never went back. And a week later, she came in to see me. So she cried through an entire box of tissues and she signed up for a membership, tissue in one hand, credit card in the other hand. And she said, put me on hold for 30 days. And it's one of the features of a matchmaking package that we usually have. So in that 6 month time frame that somebody might sign up for, if they meet somebody that they really want to get to know better, we'll put their membership on hold so they can do that up to a certain amount of time and they won't lose any dating time, which is good. So then they don't have to feel pressure to hurry up and figure things out maybe before they're ready. So anyway, she said, put me on hold for 30 days. I'm going to go home and watch sad movies and cry and eat ice cream. And Monday morning, I'm going to the gym and I'm going to wrap my head around the fact that I'm going to be single and dating again. So at this point, I already knew her first date was going to be Tim, my John F. Kennedy Jr. guy. And so it was Tim's 19th month, and it was Jennifer's first date, and there was lightning bolts and fireworks and rainbows and unicorns, and they totally hit it off and fell in love, got married, rode off into the sunset, and that is the story of Tim and Jennifer. And it's really a good story because it illustrates the fact that, you know, you can have somebody who's totally ready, who's a great candidate, and, you know, it's going to take a year and a half, maybe longer, to match them. You have somebody else matched on the first date, and I've had it happen a couple times. It doesn't happen all the time, but it definitely has happened a couple of times. So people ask you, how soon am I going to get matched? I don't know, but I tell them that story. And that helps. Yeah.
I'm curious. So, like, do you feel like there's an amount of time that is, like, the most successful amount of dating before getting married, like, time frame-wise? No, you've never, like, noticed a pattern or trend at all? Okay.
No, I actually really haven't. And, it also, you know, some of these time frames are also dependent on age, right? Mm-hmm. I'm going to recommend a much smaller period of time for my clients who are in their 50s and my clients who are in their
20s. Right. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Have you, like, what is, okay, I'm getting my personal, so I don't know.
Don't ask me any personal questions.
Okay, I'm going to go personal.
Could you 23 days and you just cut? Did you assume? I'm saying that you guys are here together, and I think that you guys have a common goal. You guys met in a good place. Thank you. All right.
Yeah.
And then, so I was just by the lake, and there's a water fountain involved or something like that. That's cool. All right. Then for sure it's good.
Yeah.
So there you go.
Right there you go. He's matchmaking already.
I was chatting with him earlier. Sorry about that. So I
no, you're good. Is there like a mass amount of clients that you'll take, or do you like give them to someone else if you have too many at once, or is there no way to have a mass? I don't know. It's kind of a weird question.
No, it's actually a really good question. I mean, there are only so many people that you are going to be comfortable working with depending on what your schedule is, right? So I'm a mom. I have two kids. I don't want to work 60 hours a week, but I won't turn people away. So if I do have an overflow of people, you know, then I'll get help. I'll hire some help in. But it's not good to max yourself out. And when you do these sessions and you're coaching people for an hour and a half once a week, right, there is a max of that I can actually deal with before I feel like I hit a wall, because you really absorb a lot of their emotional energy when you're talking to them and working through some of these things, right? And also, like, if you're in connection with God and you're in connection with your intuition, you know, you're, like, really connected in there. A lot of times you'll pick up on things that you don't even know where it came from, right? So it kind of can get exhausting. And I don't really, which is one of the reasons why I'm creating some classes to put on the website, so I can do less coaching myself and have my new matchmaking ministers do a lot of the coaching and then refer people to my classes, because I do hit a wall, and my wall is about 6 a week. Yeah.
So I know that you want them to, you want your clients to go through at least the 5 weeks.
Yeah.
You want to educate them. And then I could not help but to think about triggers, emotional intelligence, how people are seeing their view of the world versus, you know, what others may think, and how to kind of fuse that, if you will. You know what I'm saying?
5 weeks is the bare bones basic minimum. Yeah. It really is. And I we were talking earlier, and I was saying I would actually really prefer for people to go through a 12-week program. I would. But here's the problem with that. When you have people who are primarily contacting you for matchmaking, they want to meet somebody. They can go online and meet somebody 5 minutes from now. right? So they don't even want to wait 5 weeks. 5 weeks was like the maximum that I could get away with and do for the lowest price point that I felt like people would say yes and really give it a little bit of time. But I really can't, you know, if you want matchmaking and I say, okay, but you have to wait for 2 months or you have to wait for 3 months, it's harder to sell that. So what I like to do is start out with the 5 weeks, and at that time, by the end of it, you've built such a good relationship with them. A lot of times they want to renew. They say, can we keep working together for 5 more weeks? Of course we can. I would love to do that. You know? Yeah. If they do matchmaking, then we will include it in their matchmaking package. If they want to date on their own and they just want to keep coaching, or if they want to call like per session as things come up, that's fine too, right? But I really do like to keep a relationship, a solid relationship ongoing with them. Yeah.
So did you create the DIY system, or was it the Christian Institute, or who created your database?
It is a software that a lot of the matchmakers use that for their CRM functioning, that also created an online dating site. None of the matchmakers want to use it because they don't want their clients and database members to see each other and talk to each other. And they want to keep that locked down. So none of the matchmakers want to use it. But I want to use it because I don't care. I have a totally different model, really, for doing things. So yeah, so that's where we're getting our system. They're an award-winning system. They've won awards at all the dating conferences and things. So, yeah, they're good.
Another business question. In terms of protection, in terms of your protection, because, I mean, we hear all the stories about people meeting, maybe someone who's psycho, for lack of a better
word. Yeah.
Things happen in this world, right? Is there like a special insurance or?
There is matchmaking insurance. Okay. Actually, there is a thing called matchmaking insurance, so that definitely exists. And all the time that I have done this and working for like the biggest company that existed, we'd never had a problem. Now, when you're charging a high price point, that eliminates a lot of those possibilities. But let's say that you are working as a minister, you're even helping people for free. Well, what's the barrier, really, of entry that's there? It's you. And you don't really want to be liable for that. So one thing that that we always do before we start a matchmaking program is we do a background check and an identity verification. Right? So we want to see their driver's license, verify their age, right? Verify their identity, their address, all of that. And then people are split on background checks. For example, none of the online dating sites want to do a background check. And the reason they don't want to do that is that they feel that if they do a background check on someone and either they miss something or that person did something that maybe they got arrested but not convicted, right? I mean, you can think of all the loopholes and all the reasons. They're scared if they do a background check and say this person's clear, then they're guaranteeing that person. And if anything happens, then they're going to get sued for saying this guy's okay, we checked him out, and he wasn't. Right? So, and it's hard, you know, if somebody's living in a state, but they did something in another state, or is there interstate communication? So, some people don't want to do the background checks, they just want to verify the identity. Now, the nice thing is that when we're talking about really getting to know people over a period of time, you will definitely pick up on some red flags that could be there, and you simply don't send them out to meet anybody. Right? You also, your first dates every single time, public place, there's a reservation, he doesn't have her phone number. When you get the feedback process, if their guys are doing any kind of creepy, weird things, you're going to find out about it from the girls are going to call you in the feedback and tell you. He's drinking too much, he showed up smelling like he was smoking dope, whatever it might be. He told me about his ex-wife and she got a restraining order against him, but he said he didn't do anything. Right? So You'll find out. That's a great thing about the feedback process. The online dating system is so anonymous. Mm-hmm. You're meeting people that nobody knows them. And, you know, you don't know if anything they say is true. If you don't hear from them again, they just disappear. There's no way to check them out. The feedback system is phenomenal. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
You better treat them all well, because if anything goes crappy, you won't be able to know what customers see your place.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Yeah, obviously, it's more thorough with it, but
yeah.
You're more thorough with it.
Thank you.